Anyhow, regardless of what the church says otherwise, it seems like the message we keep getting as congregational leaders is size matters. So we've come together to seek a different message and to identify and amplify the beauty and grace of small. Small churches, no matter the impact you think you're making, join us to hear more about small churches making big impacts with God walking right alongside. You're with the Small Churches Big Impact Collective. Up until now, our conversations on the SCBI podcast have all been with and among clergy leaders. But we know that there are plenty of small churches out there who are led predominantly or wholly by lay folk. We want and need to hear their stories too, and to learn how these congregations are making big impacts on the church and the communities they serve. I'm one of your hosts, Layla King, for this episode.
This is Allison Sandlin-Lyles. So in this episode, we're talking with three lay leaders who serve congregations that function without established clergy. So welcome, y'all. Will you introduce yourself?
I'm Cordelia Burt. I am Bishop's Warden of St. Jude's Episcopal Church in Ocean View, Hawaii, Diocese of Hawaii.
Hi, I'm Grace Buchanan. I'm the Parish Administrator for St. Matthew's Episcopal Church, Diocese of West Texas. I'm in Edinburg, Texas, way down almost to the border.
My name is Michelle White. I am currently the treasurer of Episcopal Church of Good Shepherd in George West, Texas. It's a mission in the Diocese of West Texas.
Thank you all. We are so glad and excited and grateful that you all can be here and can share your experiences leading these small parishes as laypeople with us. Let's just get started by getting a little bit of the lay of the land of the churches that you serve. Michelle, let's let you go first.
Okay. So our average Sunday attendance is 26, give or take, relied on supply clergy for the last 2 years. We had what they call long-term supply, but today it is strictly supply clergy. And we use the supply list that is provided by the diocese to source those supply clergy.
Thank you. Grace?
Well, our ASA is around 34, and that's in the last 6 months. We are doing a little bit of growing.
That's awesome.
Is exciting, right? We have not had a regular full-time priest since 2015. We did for several years have a supply priest retired who would be with us from Thanksgiving through Easter, but he is no longer available. And so this year, we've pretty much been on morning prayer with only three exceptions since last June, and we do a lot of morning prayer week after week.
That's actually a helpful comment because, Michelle, do you have any trouble finding supply clergy, or do you pretty consistently have a priest there to celebrate Eucharist every Sunday?
We've been very fortunate to have supply clergy dedicated to coming, committed to coming. There is quite a distance from most municipalities to our little congregation in George West, Texas, which is a small town in Southwest Texas. It's about an hour and a half from San Antonio and about an hour from Corpus Christi.
Awesome. Thank you. Cordelia, I know you have a unique setup over
yes,
there
in,
at St. Jude's.
Well, our average attendance is, I would say, 23. And since 2013, we have priests that come from the mainland and England that supply for us a month at a time. We provide a vicarage, McKinney House, and we provide a car for them. Other than that, they're responsible for all of their expenses. And we do not provide a stipend. We provide Hawaii for them. The only thing that we require of them is Sunday service. What they want to do between Sundays is strictly up to them, but they must be at church on Sunday to do the Eucharist for us.
Cordelia, I'll ask you the same question Layla asked Michelle. Do you have any trouble finding priests who want to come to Hawaii?
Right now, I am fully booked for 24, 25. I am mostly booked for 26 and 27, and I have one person coming in 28.
So, because I know that there are a number of small church clergy who listen to this podcast who are all thinking, I wonder if I can get a month in Hawaii. You can get a month in Hawaii. And St. Jude's has a website where you can request to be supply clergy person at St. Jude's. And we will link that website in our show notes. So thank you for giving us the sort of basics. Go on, Grace.
Yeah, I wanted to point out with Michelle, she was talking about the priest having an hour, hour and a half drive. We're in the same diocese. But for us from San Antonio, it's about a 3.5 hour drive and about 2+ from Corpus. We have the same supply pool, but it's a lot easier for the priests in the metro areas to get to George West than it is for them to get to the valley.
And so that affects why you're having morning prayer so often.
Right.
I'm guessing.
Right. Yeah.
Grace, when you were saying you do morning prayer most weeks, you said it while you were smiling. And I think that one of the misconceptions about small church is that we're striving to fill our churches with priests so we can avoid morning prayer. And while we are centered around the Eucharist as Episcopal churches, that's such a huge part of our identity. It sounds like morning prayer has been a positive thing for your church. Will you say a little bit about who is leading morning prayer and how it's been received?
Yes, thank you. We have several lay Eucharistic ministers or certified worship leaders to lead morning prayer. And we have modified it with the bishop's permission a little bit, where in place of the canticles in most services, we actually go ahead and sing hymns. We do prayers of the people. And it makes it a little more comfortable for those that are used to the structure of the Eucharist to have some of those elements in morning prayer. And I think that's helped a lot. It's pretty joyful.
That's lovely. And would you say, Grace, that you all miss Eucharist? I mean, how do you shape your identity when that piece isn't so consistent?
That's a very good question. Do we miss Eucharist? Absolutely. And when this started some years back, we had people actually leave and go to other churches because we did not have communion on a regular basis. But we are growing, and we're growing with people who come into this situation, like it, accept it, and are growing with it. When we do have a communion service, frequently it's for a special occasion. So when we have communion, we make sure everyone knows it's coming, and then we generally do have extra folk around.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. And Michelle and Cordelia, your parishes, you do celebrate Eucharist on a weekly basis or almost weekly basis, but presumably
when you have a clergy person who's only there on Sundays, to what extent is the Eucharist central to your identity? And to what extent is it maybe not? Go on, Cordelia.
Well, Eucharist is important to us. And the funny thing about it is that the priests may come with the idea that they're going to go to the beach all the time, but we are so active as a community, in the community, that they stay on Saturdays and help us with the shower ministry, and they pop in to the hula class. St. Jude's has a saying that everybody is family. Once you have stepped foot through the doors of our church, you become family. And that's how our priests feel. We're a family that the priest becomes part of, so therefore the Eucharist is as important as it always has been. But if we would have to miss, I would say the only time that I would have an uprising on my hand would be if I didn't have someone for Christmas or Easter.
Cordelia, I love that image so much because we have this narrative that small churches are cleric-centered, that the clergy person is the person welcoming others, welcoming newcomers to the small church, that the clergy person really takes up a lot of space in small churches. And what I love about your story and your perspective at St. Jude's is that the clergy person is just one of many members of the family, right? And
That's
has
right.
no more or less importance than anybody else in that family. And I think that's such a lovely image to hold on to and to really grasp and pay some attention to, because in my view, that's how church is supposed to operate. That's how the kingdom of God operates.
I don't care whether you're a large church or a small church. The clergy person is not the one to rule. But the laity, after all, what does the prayer book say? It's laity first. If we're not there, there's no need for a priest. And there is no need for laity to expect the priest to be all-encompassing and do all the work. We're all in this together. We all make the church a family.
I love that. Michelle, what of this resonates for you?
Well, it's an interesting topic. It's got a few different perspectives. The morning prayer is actually a very ancient tradition. In fact, the primary service, at least three times out of the month, in old Anglican church, I think it was Holy Communion, was one Sunday of the month. So I think people have forgotten that. And like Cordelia's point, I mean, we are the church. And so morning prayer is a beautiful liturgy and embedded in ancient tradition. So some people embrace it when we say, oh, we're going to have morning prayer. But I think it's kind of evolved to where people expect to have a priest and to have Holy Communion delivered. Some people, I guess I'd say they're less enthusiastic about coming to church on a Sunday when we have morning prayer.
I was just so struck by, you know, Cordelia's like quoting the prayer book at us, and Michelle is talking about Anglican church history. And I am so struck by the fact that you can also not go to seminary and not be formed in ordination tracts of any sort and be really well educated in ecclesiology. And you lay folks are such a good testimony to that and testament of that. I want to pause and celebrate that for a moment, because it's really important that we know that not only are there churches in the Episcopal Church that are being led by lay folk, but there are churches in the Episcopal Church that are being led by really well qualified and really good lay folk. You all are not just like second pickings. You're not just what's left over when all the priests have been taken. You are really knowledgeable leaders in your own right. And I just want to make sure we hear that and we know that.
Michelle, I'm interested in your leadership at the church. So you mentioned that you were the treasurer, and I'm wondering who all are in leadership positions that serve with you, and who is paid and who is unpaid.
We are 100% volunteer based, except for the supply clergy. We have the normal office of bishop's ward, secretary, treasurer, and other committee members. We are so small that there's not very many of us to serve, so we kind of rotate, take turns in serving in those positions.
Michelle, I'm so amazed that you're pretty much 100% volunteer-led, because I know that there is a lot of work, and the fact that all of it is accomplished by volunteers and not many people who are paid is just amazing. Grace, I know you serve in a paid position. Tell us a little bit about how leadership works in your church.
I'm in a paid position. And since we're all involved with churches, we all know that that does not mean that we're getting rich. Okay. And we have a paid accountant, comes in once a week to take care of bookkeeping. And we have a paid janitor. Beyond that, like other churches, we are loaded with volunteers. So morning prayer, lecturing, Sunday school, children's chapel, coffee hour, the prayer group, all of the things we do are all volunteer-led. We really have a pretty good group so that everything is spread out. The same people don't have to do everything.
My experience of small churches, we're small, and there's the human resources is such a wonderful resource of a small church, because we are all like family. But at the same time, it's a finite resource as well, as all others are. And I'm curious, how do you prevent burnout for yourselves, but also for all of the many members of your small church family who have to step up and do step up in such wonderful ways? Cordelia, do you want to start?
Okay. My road began in the 70s, and I haven't laid the torch down. It's just increased. And it's because I'm working for a wonderful master, and I want to give him my all. And there's always someone beside me to shore me up when I'm not feeling at the top of my game. God does wonderful things, and we have to depend on him, because he will lead us. There have been times I've been down, but there's always somebody to pick me up. It's a wonderful, wonderful job. I enjoy learning from other people. I enjoy all of the ministries we do. I wish I had more energy to do more ministries, because as a church, we could do much more than we do, and we do a lot. I get tired. I can't do at 84 what I did at 64, and I get upset with myself that I can't, but I have to realize that I can't. So that's how I handle it.
I think that's such an interesting question, Layla, because as priests, especially those of us who were trained in residential seminaries, we were taught to be very protective of our time and to establish boundaries. The word boundaries just came up, I feel like, in every class all 3 years. But that's not something that I ever think about in terms of the lay members of my congregation, is protecting their boundaries in terms of time. And we know, I mean, everybody knows there's always something else to do in a church. Grace or Michelle, how have y'all been protective of your boundaries? Or do people respect you when you have to tell them that you can't do something because you've already worked or volunteered like hours and hours that week?
My vestry, the people of our church are so very supportive of me. There was a time that everybody that said, and I'm sure Michelle, you and Cordelia hear it, we ought to. And when they come to you and they say, we ought to do this, what they mean is you ought to do this, right? But that really has eased off so that I feel very supported. Do I get, like Cordelia, get frustrated on occasion or a little tired? Yeah. Yeah, I do.
It's really interesting for me to hear you say that, Grace, because in some ways it's so similar to my experience of being a small church rector. That experience of trying to navigate those boundaries, trying to know when to say yes and when to say no, trying to sort of encourage people who come to us and say, we ought to do this, when and learning the sort of pastoral technique of saying, I would love for you to do that. How can I help you to do that, right? I mean, that's an experience that I know so well. And it's a reminder of how much we all have in common, even though Allison and I happen to be ordained and you three happen to be lay, right? It's lovely for us all to be reminded of how much we share in this small church experience.
Just thinking about the visioning that happens and the dreaming that happens in churches and living into who we want to become. Grace, I remember you saying that St. Matthew's really wanted to have more children in the congregation. How does that happen when you don't have a paid children's minister on staff? You don't have a priest on staff? Who comes up with this dream? Who implements it? And how is that dream being realized today?
We are blessed in that we have a school attached. So our primary outreach is to the children of our school. Of course, we do chapel 5 days a week, and we do sacred studies and that type of thing. But even though we had all of those children, there were none coming to Sunday morning service. And we actually just decided that we wanted to have something, even if it was just one child, to come. And we started putting together a little bag with a Sunday school lesson based on the lectionary. We use sermons for kids, and we put little trinkets or a little craft project that goes with the lesson in the bag. And some weeks there were zero children, and then there was a child, and then there were two children, and then there were some friends. And then the kids from the school would see the bags that were set out for Sunday, and they started coming. And this past Sunday, we had only two in the littles class and eight in the older kids class, and it was a lot of fun. We have had as many as 17 or 18 on a Sunday, and we've only had one Sunday in the last 2 years that we had no children at all. This past Sunday, we had a fairly low attendance, and when the kids and I left in the middle of service to go have children's chapel, it took about half the congregation.
That's incredible.
I love that so much. And I also want to just pull some pieces together, Grace. And you also just said that you've only had one Sunday where there weren't children in the congregation this year. And I am all about the Eucharist. Like, hear me say, I think the Eucharist is so important to our identity as Episcopalians. But I think it's really important to recognize and hear that different parishes can have different relationships to Eucharist, right? And it can be more part of the identity of one parish and less part of the identity of another parish. And I think that that's really important to remember. And I just love this image that even though you are the parish that has had the least opportunities to share in communion with one another, you're also the parish that perhaps is the most family oriented and has the most children, and that that is a kind of communion in and of itself, and that that is nourishing to the congregation. And that's really a wonderful thing to just make note of and to see. Michelle and Cordelia, I'm wondering if you all have similar stories or have had similar experiences in your churches where together the lay people had a vision and worked together to make it a reality. Cordelia, I know that at St. Jude's, you do have such a vibrant and vital ministry happening there that is all lay-led and really put together. And I know you also have a Wi-Fi ministry, if I'm not mistaken. So tell us a little bit.
Our outreach began back in 2012 with the Wi-Fi ministry. We are in an area that is extremely poor. It is the largest subdivision in the United States. And many of our neighbors do not have Wi-Fi, do not have electricity, do not have running water. So we put in outside plugs and we hooked up the Wi-Fi that they can do Wi-Fi from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. So that was our first outreach. And then because of the water situation, we're on catchment. So the majority of us have only the water that God provides for us from the sky. And we're also on the edge of the Kau Desert. So we're in a drought. And we have to depend on water trucks to supplement the delivery of water when the rain doesn't come. Someone in the congregation not being able to take a shower, so she wouldn't come to church when she couldn't have a shower. So we decided we'd start the shower ministry. And now 52 people is a normal Saturday and 30 people on Wednesday taking showers.
That's such an amazing story. I love how in both Cordelia and Grace's stories, it just takes one person, recognizes a need, and then the whole community comes together to find a solution and to build God's kingdom on earth, which is spectacular. I'm curious, having the items to put into the little kits that you put together for the children, Grace, or having enough, you know, having Wi-Fi service available, paying for water service, especially in a drought-ridden area, these things cost money. They're financially a toll, presumably, on the congregation. And most small churches, financial resources are one of those quite limited resources. How do you do that, especially when you don't have a clergy person, you know, writing the stewardship letter or raising the money for a capital campaign or something like that?
Let me answer. The more you give, the more God will give. The more you give of your time, your resources, your energy, the more God will give you. Our outreach program is not from our budgeted church everyday keep up budget. It is a separate budget. We have had businesses in town that have given us designated funds specifically for our ministries of outreach. People that don't come to church, people that don't really have anything to do with the church, but agree with what we're doing, and so therefore they provide the money. We have a larger amount in outreach than we have in day-to-day running the church. We have a man that does not attend the church, but he likes what we do. Every time we have Saturday and Wednesday, he takes the towels home, washes them, dries them, and brings them back to us. And that's his ministry. So the more you give, the more God will give you.
Thank you, Cordelia, for that inspiration, because that's so on point. It is in giving that we receive. And thank you for reminding us of that and reminding me. We have a very generous congregation. They do give, and we have been given many gifts from God that almost like our cup runneth over.
What you're helping me to see, and is a, I think a connection that that I want to draw out here, is that I wonder if, because you all serve in churches that don't have consistent clergy doing that work, it means that your lay folk, your fellow members of the body, as you are in these local contexts, are fully invested in the mission and ministry of your church. Everyone has to participate in the church, in the body of Christ, because there's no priest coming in and doing half of the work. And I don't have data to support this, so I just don't know. I would be willing to bet that stewardship in lay-led congregations is really quite strong, because when you're emotionally invested, I bet investing your money is just the natural outflow of that.
In our church, we stopped doing pledge cards, 4 or 5 years ago. The only thing we ask the congregation to do is give us a written estimate, and they can write it on a little piece of paper, of what they think they might be able to give us during the year so that we can fix up an approximate budget. We don't do fancy statements. Our treasurer does a nice little Christmas thank you card that says, this is what you gave us this year and we appreciate it, so that they have something for their taxes. But we don't really do pledge drives at all.
What you're asking people to do is essentially fill out a pledge card, but it's the St. Matthew's version of it. Like, that's just one more added expense that you're able to strike from your budget, is to not have to pay for the printing of a letter, fancy cards, the mailings, all of that. You know your community, you're getting the information that you need while also saving.
I can't imagine that it's easy to do this work of being church without an assigned clergy person. I know that it is demanding in ways, even if it's joyful to fulfill those demands. And are there ways that your diocesan infrastructure, that the church at large, could better support you in that work?
Actually, our diocese supports us tremendously. They agree with what we do. They don't force us to do something that we don't want to do. Our diocese supports us 100%. Bishop Bob even goes to clergy things and tells everybody what we do and to sign up. So I think it's understanding that it's not that we don't want to have priests be in charge. It's the idea that laity can do it if they have to do it, and give them the reins and let them do it. I love my clergy that come. We have grown so much as a church, spiritually and educationally, because we have priests coming that we could not afford in a million years, that bring to us their education, their knowledge, and their energy. So I would say the diocese and the church could support laity in everything we want to see accomplished as lay people. So that's Cordelia.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're saying, you know, trust lay folk, be in conversation and trust that lay people know their own identity and know themselves well enough to be able to do that work on their own. Grace, you were going to say something?
We are searching for a priest. We are trying to arrange for a shared ministry with the congregation one town over. And so getting a priest is very important. But our diocese has been so supportive. Our bishop, our archdeacon, it's just been so good. It's been hard to get someone who wants to commit to this part of the state of Texas. But yeah, we're hanging in there and they are right behind us. So we're very appreciative.
Thanks, Grace. Michelle, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I would echo Grace. The Diocese of West Texas is amazing. They have an excellent staff and they put out a lot of resources for us online and various forms of communication. So that's one aspect. And then the support really is also evident in the clergy we have that come, like Grace mentioned, to far off places like George West and even further. We had two bishops and one archdeacon visit this year, which was, they are stretched pretty thin. So to get the level of support that we get, it's really amazing what they do.
What are some things that the rest of the church, like maybe people who attend larger congregations or are in leadership positions in the diocese, what are some things that you would want them to learn about small church ministry?
I don't think small churches are very different from big churches, but in a small church, when you share the peace, you can walk around and share the peace with every single person in the room. And you can't do that if there's 200 people in the room. There are things that are so special for the three of us with our little bitty groups of being able to tell immediately when someone walks through the door if they're having a bad day and need an extra hug, or if there's something that the kids are so excited about that you can ask them about it. And in a small congregation, that family that Cordelia talks about, you really have that. You really have that person-to-person, eye-to-eye understanding of one another and the ability to lift up, comfort, celebrate with each other that I'm not sure that you get in a really large congregation.
Thanks, Grace. And I do want to highlight the fact that you don't need a clergy person to make church, because what you're talking about is church. That is what church is all about. I think back to the ecclesia in the earliest churches and how all it really was coming together and sharing in the meal together and being with one another and doing what you just said, Grace, celebrating with and mourning with and offering hugs and raising up the children, you know, all that sort of stuff. And you don't need a priest to do that. We like priests, but they're not necessary for church to happen and for mission to happen and for fellowship to happen. Well, before we wrap up, we have a question for all our guests on every episode of Small Churches, Big Impact. What's one small thing that has made a big impact or brought big joy in your life? Grace, do you have something in mind?
God kind of does the Gibbs dope slap on the back of your head. And it moved me from a career that I absolutely loved after 40 years to a church, kicking and screaming all the way. And it's been so much fun.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for God's dope slaps.
I love it. That's the best. God's dope slaps. Well done. Thank you, Grace. Cordelia?
For me, the last month has been an interesting travel, the path that I've had to be put upon. And my family is here. My family is my church. And they have rallied round and they have filled me with so much joy. And I thank God that he's put me where I am.
That's so lovely, Cordelia, because your small thing that has made a big impact is your small church. It's like you're a walking advertisement for SCBI. So thank you. Michelle?
I would say our community has really rallied around prayer and faith and come together in a communal way that maybe is rare in towns. I'm not sure. I experienced it everywhere, but we have really gone to great strides since last Christmas. We started this community Christmas program and all the churches participate and the whole community came out. It was just a beautiful thing. And that's really carried forward into this year. And so we hope that that grows the mission, grows God's work, and we continue to live in his way.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Cordelia and Grace and Michelle, for being with us here, for having this conversation, for representing the many small churches out there who are doing God's work without the benefit of consistent clergy people. Thank you for the ministries that you have yourselves and that you have in your churches and that your churches have. We are so glad you are part of the Episcopal Church, and we are so glad you are part of the Small Churches Big Impact Collective. So thank you all.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Small Churches Big Impact. We hope this has been a chance for you to explore how your ministry and the ministry of those who surround you are making an impact, no matter how small you may feel. And we hope you'll continue noticing that even in small ways, God is making a big impact in your life. You're with the Small Churches Big Impact.